The Trumpet Daily Program begins right now.
Today's world news, what it means, where it's taking us.
I bring you the one and only possible message of world peace.
This is a message of hope, tremendous hope. And he said unto me, you must prophesy again.
And now, The Trumpet Daily with Stephen Flurry.
Hello again, everyone, and welcome back to the Trumpet Daily Radio Show. We're coming, for those outside the United States, as I said yesterday, we're broadcasting an hour early for the next 3 weeks. So the international audience will have to keep that in mind. Lots to get to on today's program. Lots to update you on as well. The upcoming Glasgow and Portland PAX, of course, those are coming up this weekend and next. And we'll be giving you the details on the response to those packs in the next couple of weeks of programming. Also, I'm told from our headquarters campus in Edmond, Oklahoma, where we're hosting the archaeological exhibit that's been going on since we kicked it off, I guess, in June of last year. So what would that be? Eight months, I guess. And I'm told that we just last week passed 7,000 total visitors to that exhibit over the course of what will eventually be 40 weeks, I guess. In the next 2 or 3 weeks, we will reach 40 weeks, and we're coming right up to the end of that display. So if you haven't seen that world premiere yet, and you're near Edmond, Oklahoma, perhaps now is the time to set aside some vacation time so you can make it over there to view that exhibit. 7,000 total visitors, and of that number, 6,000 are from outside the PCG. So the largest chunk of that number comes from people just out and about. So we're very grateful for the to be able to host that, and also to be able to put that archaeological exhibit and the headquarters campus on display. Coming up later in this program, we're going to be talking, or at least aiming our Bible study at men in particular. There's one article that I'll lead off with that really does, well, it's not unlike many others that are talking about the crisis among men today. And so we'll turn to the Bible as we so often do and describe from the Bible what true Christian leadership, male leadership, is all about. First here, we just want to update you on, the story we had yesterday regarding Rouhani's visit to Iraq. There's a follow-on to that. You may have seen some tweets and things and even footage from this big delegation. I think he had something like 16 people traveling with him there in a big boardroom somewhere in Baghdad, I suppose. As the Jerusalem Post said, a real opportunity for Iran here to get some publicity. It's all about the optics, as the JP brings out. This Post article says Haider al-Kowi, I guess, an Iraq-based analyst, illustrated the symbolism in this visit by juxtaposing it with U.S. President Donald Trump's visit in December of last year. So you had the President of the United States that visited Iraq in December, and now you have the leader of Iran, the Islamic State of Iran, the number one state sponsor of terrorism. And so when the president, when Donald Trump visits Iraq last year, just a few months ago in December, he made a quick visit to the troops and then left, and that was it. Rouhani was welcomed with an actual red carpet. They rolled out the red carpet for Hassan Rouhani. It says here, at a Parliamentary Defense and Security Committee, according to Iraq watcher David M. Whitty, a statement noted that Iraq will not become a milk cow for the U.S. This is Iraq's statement. We're not going to become a milk cow for the U.S. We will not comply with U.S. demands that we pay for U.S. presence in Iraq. We will vote on a law soon requiring the end of foreign forces in Iraq. So that's the tone that they take with the United States. But with Iran, of course, as I covered yesterday, it's altogether different. The JP says, from Iran's point of view, nothing could be going better in this visit. Iran will showcase its alliance and meet with sectors of society, including Grand Ayatollah Ali Sistani, the leading Shiite cleric who helped raise the militias that fought ISIS. And so here, as is prophesied, and we went through this in detail yesterday, I'll just refer you to yesterday's program. We took you through some of those prophecies. We reminded you of what we've been saying since the early 1990s. We converted some of that material into last night's trumpet brief as well. So if you haven't listened to yesterday's show, you can find that, again, posted at thetrumpet.com website. One more follow-up to something we just touched on briefly last week, I believe it was. This inventor of the internet or the web is lamenting the state of it today. We're 30 years on, as I said last week. And this article from the Associated Press says the inventor of the World Wide Web knows his revolutionary innovation is coming of age and doesn't always like what he sees. State-sponsored hacking, online harassment, hate speech, and misinformation among the ills of its digital adolescence. It always astounds me when you hear about the things that the internet, well, all of the bad things. No one ever mentions the viral spread of online pornography, just the most vile images that spread right around the world instantly. And instead, they talk about online harassment, hate speech, misinformation, and no one even mentions pornography. And the great damage that that's caused to our foundation in society, the family, marriage and family. Well, we probably should devote some more time and space to a lengthier segment on the impact, the negative impact that the internet has had on our society. Of course, there are very few positives. One of them you're using right at the moment, by either listening to this podcast or listening to it live. That's made possible by an internet stream. But how sad it is that so many people and so much of this technology is used for the purposes of spreading evil and lies. It certainly is proof. I guess if you step back and look at it in the big picture, it's proof that there is a real spirit world. It certainly is proof that Satan is the god of this world, as Paul said in 2 Corinthians 4. Well, just going through some of the headlines here, the Democrats have come out, at least the leadership, the Democratic Party is somewhat divided right now because you have all the young guns, you have all of the media darlings, and then you have the old guard, Schumer and Pelosi and the like. And it's interesting, Nancy Pelosi came out, she's the U.S. House Speaker, and she came out and said it's not worth impeaching Donald Trump. Now, she's supposedly the most powerful Democrat in Washington. But when you look at the way that the media are fawning over Ocasio-Cortez and some of the other young ones, the young Muslim woman that made those racist statements, and they all rush to her defense. But here's Pelosi. She's holding down the old guard. She says, I'm not for impeachment. This was in an interview she gave with the Washington Post. And the Post says this is the strongest signal yet that the Democratic leadership is hesitant about taking this step, something that the radical leftist Democrat base is urging them to take. It quotes Pelosi in this article, impeachment is so divisive to the country that unless there's something so compelling and overwhelming and bipartisan, I don't think we should go down that path because it divides the country. Well, good for her. She doesn't say a lot of things that we agree with on this program, but she's right. and that it would certainly divide the country, worse than it's already divided. You wonder if some of these long-term Democrats are alarmed by the rise of these younger ones that are taking the party so far to the left, the radical left. Adam Schiff, he's another one. He heads up the House Intelligence Committee. He, like Pelosi, he had this to say just yesterday regarding impeachment. Clip one.
In the absence of very graphic evidence, it would be difficult to get the support in the Senate needed to make an impeachment successful. So again, you know, my feeling is let's see what Bob Mueller produces. But the evidence will have to be pretty overwhelming.
That's pretty astounding coming from him, because I think it was about a year ago when he said he had the evidence. He had the evidence for impeachment. And then, of course, others were saying, well, where is it? Are you going to bring it forward? But now here he is following in the steps of Pelosi, saying unless there's something, you know, truly graphic, then we're not going to be it has to be overwhelming, or we're not going to be able to go down this road toward impeachment. And yet all of these investigations, they continue. You would think, just judging by what Pelosi and Schiff said yesterday, you would think that people would begin to do some soul searching and say, well, hang on a second. Maybe all of these investigations coming from every angle, maybe it is like the president has said. Maybe it is just harassment. If there's no truth to it, if there's not enough evidence to even get the impeachment proceedings going, then what are we doing? Byron York had a piece on Sunday where he referred to what the president has said repeatedly. This is... well, he uses the word hoax quite often, but more recently he's been talking about it as being presidential harassment. They just want to harass me. And York says that he has a point. It's unprecedented. All of these law enforcement probes, the congressional probes, the investigations, together, says York, it adds up to a pile-on of unprecedented proportions, by and large the work of blue state Democrats who stand to gain politically if their investigations succeed in crippling the president. So many of these investigations, they're headed up by the deep blue state Democrats, and they're going to gain from it. They're not in danger of losing their seats. But I think Pelosi and Schiff can see that there's not enough in maybe more of the swing states, and certainly not in the red states, to support an impeachment run. There's just not enough support for it. So they're looking at it realistically. And to Pelosi's credit, she said it would just further divide the country, and she's right. But the investigations... well, look at all of them that are going on right now. Byron York goes through them in his piece. You have the New York State Department of Financial Services. They, based upon a statement by Michael Cohen, they immediately went after this insurance company, Aon, I guess it is, this insurance broker for some of the president's companies, because of what Mr. Cohen said. Well, Donald Trump, I think he's done this and this. And so immediately, here's this agency, this governing agency that regulates the insurance business. Immediately, they go after this company. Like we've been saying, if you get reeled into Donald Trump's orbit, you are in danger of being investigated. You've got the State Department of Taxation and Finance. They're going after... Donald Trump's taxes. He came in, of course, as a billionaire. He had buildings all over the world when he was running for president. And so they want to see the taxes. They want to look at every little thing that he's done. Capitol Hill, they want it. They want the tax returns as well. This has been a tradition, I guess, for a few decades. And now, according to Democrats, it's law. You have to turn over your tax records. And the mere fact that he hasn't is in itself proof. That's proof enough that he's a crook. That he's a criminal. They're sure of it. York says if Democrats get the returns, and that is not guaranteed given the expected legal fight, it's likely they will start even more investigations. See, they want the returns because if they can get the returns and see anything that might look a little bit fishy, that will trigger another investigation. Multiple investigations. You've had a lot of these, if you notice, these investigations are coming out of the state of New York, the deep blue state of New York. New York state officials have filed suit against the Trump Foundation, which, as York brings out, agreed to dissolve as part of the investigation. And then you've got, he refers to the New York Attorney General race recently, where both candidates, basically they were out there campaigning, saying if you vote for me, I'll go after Trump. If you vote for me, I'll go after all of his real estate dealings. If you vote for me, I'll look for anything and everything that needs to be investigated. That's what they're campaigning on in the deep blue state of New York. And it's not just New York. You have attorneys general in Maryland and the District of Columbia that are suing Donald Trump, accusing him of violating the Emoluments Clause. He's violated the Constitution. And this is not just threats. This is not just talking on MSNBC. These are actual lawsuits. This is actual litigation that the president has to concern himself with. Is he right that he's just being harassed at every turn? You've got the Southern District of New York who are going after Donald Trump at every turn as well. And a lot of Democrats are pinning their hopes, their faith in that Southern District of New York because they don't think Mueller has the goods. Mueller's been going at it for almost 2 years, and nothing really has come from that. Certainly nothing related to Russian collusion. Nothing. Last week, you had the House Judiciary Committee demanding documents from 81 people associated with Donald Trump, including his family members, his secretaries, his former lawyers, all of them. Anyone connected to Donald Trump, and they put forward this wide-ranging request for documents, and subpoenas will surely follow. Even some of their own Democrats said that this was an overreach. And then, of course, and this is all apart from the Mueller probe, as York brings out. You've got the ongoing Senate and House investigations over the Trump-Russia collusion. They haven't given up on that. All of this, as York brings out, could qualify easily as presidential harassment. He concludes by saying this: Democrats would no doubt respond that Trump is singularly corrupt or that he brought it all on himself. He did not. What has happened is that Democrats in Congress and in some key blue states saw investigation as a way to weaken a president they never thought would be elected and want to ensure is not reelected in 2020. And Trump, with the most extensive business history ever brought to the presidency, presented a lot of avenues of investigation. It says when he complains about harassment, he has a legitimate case to make. He has a legitimate case. There's been all this talk, this ridiculous talk over the last week because of that New Yorker story that Fox News supposedly is the propaganda arm of the White House. But look at all these other organizations, these other news companies, these other stations and newspapers and such. And look at the way they go after this presidency every single day, attacking him. This was this clip I have here. I think it was from one of the cable shows last night. But what's astounding is that it's a Democratic representative in Congress, and this is someone talking about how that we need the tax returns. We need President Trump's tax returns. And here's what he had to say last night, clip two.
Confidence in the tax system that this president, with his disregard of taxes and his history of apparent fraud, It creates a problem for, as well as the questions about Saudi and Russian influence in investments in his businesses. So the sooner the better, and the more comprehensive the better. It must include the business operations of the Trump Organization, which appears from some testimony to be almost a criminal enterprise.
Just consider all those words he used. President Trump's disregard of taxes, his apparent fraud, the questions that they have about connections to Saudi or Russian investments. The whole organization, it appears from some testimony to be almost a criminal enterprise. This is a Democrat in Congress using all those loaded words and then qualifying it. Almost, maybe, apparent questions. And then to say it's a criminal enterprise? It's just happening every night. That's why it doesn't stand out to most people. They hear this there every day on those cable stations. The presenters themselves, like MSNBC's Nicole Wallace, this is what she had to say last night, clip three.
And I think we're entering a new phase where a lot of men and women are going to have to go home and talk to their families and look at their kids and decide if Donald Trump is worth going to jail for.
And the sad part of that statement is she's actually right. Because you sign up to work for Donald Trump and you immediately become a target. That's what she's saying. It's true. It's true. Now, she believes they're all criminals. She believes that if you work for Donald Trump, you're a criminal. And so you better think twice about it. It's kind of like a veiled threat. You sign up for helping him, and you become a target. So that's the, like Melanie Phillips said in that interview we had with her a couple of weeks ago, that's the narrative. They're never going to break out of it, that he's a criminal. And so all of our stories have to align with that. And it's the same when you look at Prime Minister Netanyahu in Israel. He's got some elections coming up. I said yesterday, I referred to that briefly. I think it's in April, early April, April 9th maybe. And the New York Times, by the way, I didn't have time to get this yesterday, but they had a piece yesterday, which again, even as an opinion piece, it would have been almost laughable, but it's running on the front page of the New York Times. And talking about this relationship between Prime Minister Netanyahu and Donald Trump, and of course, because they have a good relationship, that means both of them must be corrupt. So here's the New York Times writing, hopefully, that Netanyahu might be defeated in the April election. It says, if Netanyahu could forge a governing majority, it's talking about that even if he wins, he might have trouble forming a coalition. But it says here, if Netanyahu could forge a governing majority, it's likely to be so far right as to complicate or even derail the Trump administration's long-awaited peace plan. Listen to this. In the United States, Mr. Netanyahu's new alliance with a racist Israeli fringe party is already freeing Democrats to denounce him with fewer concerns about Republican blowback. So all of this that you've heard Democrats saying in recent weeks, and nobody's penalized for it, all of this Jew hatred, nobody loses their job, not if you're a Democrat. And here comes the New York Times saying, well, actually, it's Netanyahu. He's the racist. It's this Israeli fringe party. They're the racists. And then, of course, Donald Trump's administration's lumped into this. The Times says it's gotten to the point that an analyst tracking the American assistance to Mr. Netanyahu's campaign have taken to guessing what Mr. Trump might toss his way next. In other words, the Trump administration is helping him to win. That's what they want. It says there's nothing unheard of about a president trying to influence the Israeli election. And then it mentions George H.W. Bush and his desire to help Yitzhak Rabin back in the 90s, and then Bill Clinton and how he tried to help Shimon Peres. They make no mention of Barack Obama, who used taxpayer money to try to oust Netanyahu just a few years ago. Just a few years ago, $350,000 of U.S. taxpayers' money sent to One Voice, this group in Israel that made it pretty clear and plain. They were trying to take out Netanyahu and using U.S. taxpayer money to try to do it. Coming back to this New York Times piece, it says the interplay achieved, speaking again of this relationship between Bibi and Mr. Trump, it says the interplay achieved a kind of funhouse mirror effect a week ago when Mr. Netanyahu tweeted about a segment of Fox and Friends. That's another enemy. A segment of Fox and Friends, Mr. Trump's favorite program, they got to throw that in there, in which an American commentator had dismissed the Israeli corruption case using talking points Mr. Netanyahu easily could have dictated. This is in the main news section, the main news section of the New York Times. And look, you look at the way they're on the attack. They're going after Fox News commentators. They're going after President Trump. They're going after the Fox and Friends morning show. All of them. Media Matters, they're working overtime to take people out, to take out their enemies, to silence any opposing voice. Even as they get away with, well, Sam gave me a piece just the other day about all of these. They're so concerned about Donald Trump violating the Constitution, and there's all of these unconstitutional attacks that have happened over the last several years coming from the deep state, coming from the Antiochus administration, the one there before Donald Trump ever came along. We'll switching gears here for a second over to the budget that President Trump proposed yesterday, $4.75 trillion. Now, these presidential budgets never really do make it through Congress, at least not in the way that the president draws it up. But it does give you insight into what are his priorities. Most of the headlines yesterday were about the $8.6 billion he wants for construction of the wall, the additional money he wants for the construction of the wall. It also points out the increase in military spending, giving the Pentagon, this is from the New York Times, giving the Pentagon more than it even asked for. But what few people talk about, of course, is just the runaway spending. There's no end in sight. And there's only just a precious few that will even say anything about how that this cannot go on. There was one, Representative Tom Reed, I think he's from... Well, I failed to write it down, but I believe he's a Republican who was on MSNBC last night talking about this debt crisis and where it's leading. Clip four.
I mean, I've run on the debt crisis because I see it as an imminent threat to America's future. And Admiral Mullen had it right. The national debt is the national security threat that we see at the highest levels of government across both spectrums and in the military's perspective. So attacking this issue shouldn't be a political issue. This should be a substantive existential threat against America that we need to come together, and people need to realize that crisis is going on as we speak.
It's going on right now. It's a slow-moving crisis, which is why people ignore it, but it is an imminent threat, and he refers there to Admiral Mullen's statement, which we've drawn attention to before. It's a national security threat, and you put it together with all these other articles that we've been just putting in the stack, the economy stack. U.S. credit card debt, it closed 2018 at a record $870 billion. That's just the everyday, average, ordinary U.S. consumer. Putting it all together, almost $1 trillion in debt, in credit card debt. There's something like 480 million credit cards in circulation in the United States. And even that's something like 100 million more than it was just a decade ago. Addicted to deficit spending. We're all guilty, that article says. We're all guilty. $1 trillion. If you look at all other forms of individual debt, U.S. consumers are at something like $13.5 trillion in debt. Add in the home loans, the cars, and everything else. College tuition or loans, I guess. $13.5 trillion. There's another one here from Overspent. Some states consistently live beyond their means. So it's from top to bottom. It's at the federal level. It's at the state level. It's at the local level. And it's at the individual level. This one's about the states. Since 2003, 10 states, like impulse buyers wandering through a mall on Black Friday, have repeatedly run deficits, spending more than they generate in taxes, fees, and federal grants, and pushing off to future taxpayers some past costs for operating government and providing services. They just put it off for the future generations. Let them pay for it. Nobody can even draw up a budget. Whether you're at the federal level or anywhere else on down the line, a budget that would just do something as simple and as practical as don't spend more than you take in. No one can do it. And so what does that mean? Well, if you apply the wisdom of the Proverbs and the Psalms and other passages of Scripture, you know that the party is going to come crashing down. It's unsustainable. Another one from MarketWatch says Fed's Kaplan calls for vigilance on corporate debt levels. Corporate debt. That's a massive problem as well. And then you have the deficit. It said it soared to $310 billion at the start of fiscal year 2019, up 77% from the year before. This was something that the Trump administration wanted to come in and reduce. And he was going to add tariffs if he needed to do it. And yet the deficit has increased 77% compared to last year. Another one here from The Guardian. It says Trump's tariff war pushes U.S. trade deficit to a 10-year high. So the problem's not being fixed. At least not yet. Maybe there will be a temporary fix in the Jeroboam era, but we're certainly not seeing it at this point. One final subject here that I just want to touch on. Just coming off of a tweet yesterday from the UK Defense Journal, German Chancellor Angela Merkel has endorsed the idea of a joint European aircraft carrier. We need an EU military. And we've talked at length on this program in recent months about this strong union between Germany and France, about NATO disbanding, about Europe going it alone, about Europe creating its own military, its own defense. You look at that statement from the German chancellor and then consider even what's happening, the facts on the ground, the story from the local. Germany's now the fourth largest exporter of arms in the world. It's a growing industry in Germany. 7.8% increase from 2014 to 2018. There's another increase here, something like 13%, I think it was. But let me switch over to GermanForeignPolicy.com. In its article, Weapons for the World, it says Germany has increased its arms exports by more than 1/8 of the last 5 years over the previous 5-year period, making it the world's fourth largest arms exporter. It says the alleged EU peace force thus occupies the second place when you put Germany together with the other EU member states. It says the alleged EU peace force thus occupies the second place in the ranking of the largest arms exporters after the USA, with over a quarter of all shipments worldwide. It says, as a result, NATO countries account for almost 2/3 of global war equipment exports, more than 3 times as much as Russia and 13 times as much as China. Ouch. It doesn't make the West look very good. For all of their belligerence, Russia and China, it's the Western nations, the NATO nations, that are arming the world overwhelmingly. And so what happens when the madmen start pushing the buttons? Well, you look at the recent conflict between India and Pakistan, and as one opinion writer at the Boston Globe said, we're edging closer to nuclear war. If controls on nuclear weapons continue to weaken, more countries will probably develop those weapons, it says. We're getting that much closer to nuclear war. We've got some material accumulating on this subject, too, that we'll save for a future program. When we come back, we'll look at this article at The Atlantic on the decline of men and consider the biblical solution. You're listening to Stephen Fleury, and this is the Trumpet Daily Radio Show. If you'd like to email the program, you can send comments to td@kpcg.fm. We'll be right back.
This is KPCG-FM, and this is the Trumpet Daily. Untold thousands of professing Christian ministers have, over the centuries, preached Christ. They have professed to be his ministers, to represent him. They have said Jesus of Nazareth is the Christ, but they have withheld Christ's gospel. Thus, the vast majority of people on earth have been deceived by false gospels. The incredible human potential reveals how men were deceived about the truth of the gospel, and it makes plain what the good news of the true gospel really is. The true gospel of God's coming kingdom is directly concerned with world conditions as they are, with human nature, its source and origin, with world evils, suffering, unhappiness, with world peace. It's concerned with government, with the reason present human governments fail to be the benefactors of their peoples they are supposed to be. This all-important subject is thoroughly explained in Herbert Armstrong's book, The Incredible Human Potential. Request The Incredible Human Potential today. To learn more, please visit thetrumpet.com. From the Philadelphia Church of God campus in Edstone, England, this is the Trumpet Daily Program with Stephen Fleury.
This report at The Atlantic, it said that the prime working age men, that's the prime age between 25 and 54, that as late as the 1960s, 95% of them were employed. They were in the workforce. They were working productively. Today, that's, well, at least according to the figures in 2015, it might be slightly worse today, but that figure has now dropped to 85%, and so we're seeing a decline in the workforce among prime working age men. This is a trend that's been building for several decades now, says The Atlantic. And in a paragraph further on in the piece, it talks about the decline of marriage. Men and women not marrying like they used to. In fact, it says it's a sharp decline in marriage rates. So men aren't stepping up in the workforce. They're not stepping up in the home. In far too many cases, they're going absent. This is a role in the family, in the marriage, that is under a vicious attack. There's a conspiracy against it, as my father has written. And this is what we in God's church have to steadfastly resist against. The men of God, the men of Israel, so to speak. My father wrote in the New Throne of David book that we're raising up the ruins of King David's throne. And so we must strive to restore King David's godly leadership. We in the church, we men of God, we're here to restore righteous leadership, righteous rule. King David's godly leadership. So what does the Bible have to say about it? Your role as a man, as a husband, as a father. Well, these are verses I'll read to you. These are verses right out of the New Testament. Verses that the traditional Christian world would rather us ignore. But this is God-inspired text. This is God inspiring the Apostle Paul, a great man of God, a great leader for God, in the first century, when he said, "But I would have you know that the head of every man is Christ, and the head of the woman is the man, and the head of Christ is God." And so it's God who establishes the authority in the home. God intended for the man to be a leader, to be a leader in the home, to be a leader in society. The head of every man is Christ. That's really the key phrase here, as much as people might focus on another phrase in that same verse. This is 1 Corinthians 11 and verse 3. But the only way a true Christian leader can properly lead a loving wife is if Jesus Christ is leading him. The head of every man is Christ. That's the key to success in marriage, is making sure that Jesus Christ is at the head of that union, that family. And then it continues on down from there. Verse 8, it says, "For the man is not of the woman, but the woman of the man." She was made originally, she was made from Adam's rib, because God wanted her to stand right beside him. She was to be his complement. They were to be a team, with him leading and with her being a wonderful and encouraging support. It says in verse 9, "Neither was the man created for the woman, but the woman for the man." These are not verses you're going to hear expounded upon in the universities of today. You're not going to hear these expounded upon in the Christian churches of today. The woman created for the man, created to fill a great need in his life, created to complete him. You won't hear about that in this world today. Satan's turned everything upside down. But you study through this chapter and you see godly leadership. It flows from God to Christ, to the husband, to the wife. And when it flows this way, then God can bless the marriage. He blesses the household. As I say, the question isn't so much whether the man is the head of the wife, but whether that Jesus Christ is the head of the man. The man, the husband, the leader, the father, must actively follow his head as attentively, as submissively as Jesus Christ follows his head, his heavenly Father. And if we get that right as men, then we have an obligation to direct and to teach our wives, our children, to provide their spiritual needs. Look at the marriage chapter. This too was authored by the Apostle Paul. Inspired, though, inspired by the great God. Ephesians 5, verse 23, it says, "For the husband is the head of the wife, even as Christ is the head of the church, and he is the Savior of the body." Look at the model. Look at the perfect model that we're to pattern our marriages and families after. God says to the husbands, "Head up the wife. You're the head, even as Christ is the head of the church." So in the same way that Jesus Christ, the loving husband Jesus Christ, leads the church, he's the head over everything within the church. He has final say. It says to husbands, true Christian husbands, now you be that same way. You be like Christ. You be like the Savior. Set the right example. That's primarily how we lead. Be the spiritual leader. Help her. Help the children. Be a leader in Bible study. Be discerning so that you can point out problems that we need to face in the family, tactfully, delicately, if need be, or with stronger authority, with God's loving government. This is a pretty clear and vivid image. The head, you know what a physical body looks like. We all do. We see it every morning in the mirror. The head is responsible. The body follows the direction of the head. And so for you men, as the heads of the home, think about where that true Christian leadership begins. It starts with you in your spiritual life. Every day, your first duty in life is to God. A husband must follow his head. We can't fully and truly fulfill our role as a husband and as a father unless we're following our head, unless we're deeply submissive to Jesus Christ. If we're not listening to our head and we're out there trying to do things on our own, then we're going to get our marriages and our families into trouble. It's the same with anywhere along that line, that chain of authority. If it begins to break down, then you run into trouble. Now, in this world today, where, as I said in the first segment, we're just being bombarded by the influence of Satan the devil, it's an upside-down world. It's not easy in a world like this to submit to Jesus Christ. We have to work at it. We have to fight to hold to that godly standard. But just know that our relationship with God, it affects others. It affects our wives. It affects our children. It really does start in the prayer closet with the quality of your prayers day in and day out. Your study, your relationship with God, that relationship with our Creator, it really and truly does have real world everyday consequences. By their fruits, you shall know them. You're going to know by the fruits. If that husband is really submitted to Christ, this is something that we have to keep working at and keep growing in over the course of our conversion. And the more faithful and submissive we are to Christ as our head, the easier we make it for our wives to submit to our God-ordained leadership, because she's going to be seeing growth and fruits as well. Not perfection, not yet. We're not yet God beings. But when she looks to you, she needs to see even beyond you to the head, who is Jesus Christ. The primary way we lead our wives, our families, is by example, as I said earlier. It's by the way that we relate to God. It's by the way that we cry out to God. It's by the way that we serve in the work. The way that we study our Bibles, Jesus Christ in print, meditate on God's truth, the fastings that we schedule into the calendar, our obedience to God's commands day in and day out, our submissive attitude toward His government, those day-to-day habits and routines, they speak volumes. Our wives are watching. Our children are watching. The decisions we make daily, it's all on display. God, of course, takes note. God's evaluating all that we do. He's preparing us for positions of rule, just like that quote I gave to you at the top of the segment. raising the ruins of King David's throne, striving to restore King David's godly leadership. This is what we're here to do. One final scripture here, speaking of a king and his behavior. You can see the last several verses of Deuteronomy 17, some wise instruction and counsel for kings. This is what they were to do in ancient Israel. This is how God wanted them to lead. This is how God trained them. Deuteronomy chapter 17, read it for yourself. Study it later today. Consider the wisdom of this passage. Take it to heart. Apply it in your day-by-day routines. It says in verse 18, and it shall be when he sits upon the throne of his kingdom that he shall write him a copy of this law in a book out of that which is before the priests, the Levites. He's going to write out, this is a true Christian leader, a kingly leader. He's going to write out a copy of the law so that it can be ingrained into his thinking. A true Christian leader, a true Christian male authority, he must love God's law. He must know the law. In ancient Israel, as I say, they had to write it out. Moses continues in verse 19, it says, and it shall be with him, and he shall read therein all the days of his life, that he may learn to fear the Eternal, his God, to keep all the words of this law and these statutes, and to do them, to rule with God as kings and priests. We have to know and to be able to teach God's law. That's how we as men, we need to be evaluating ourselves daily. Are we really fit to rule with Christ? Are we qualifying for those positions of rule? A lot of it depends on our daily study of God's Word. Mr. Armstrong used to say, are we gaining ground? Are we making progress? Are we growing? It says finally in verse 20, that his heart be not lifted up above his brethren, and that he turn not aside from the commandment to the right hand or to the left, to the end that he may prolong his days in his kingdom, he and his children in the midst of Israel. You see, it prolongs not only his rule, his kingdom, but his family, his children. It affects everything. So get to know this Word of God. Write down your own personal copy if you have to commit it to memory. Learn it, and then use it. Use it. Learn how to lead. Learn how to rule like Christ. Not like the rulers of this world who lord it over, as Jesus said, but who rule in love. They are authoritative. They have a rod of iron when needed, so to speak. But they're motivated by godly love, and they're always submitting to their head, who is Jesus Christ. You're listening to Stephen Fleury, and this is the Trumpet Daily Radio Show. If you'd like to email the program, you can send any and all comments to td@kpcg.fm. Thank you for joining us on today's program, and we'll see you tomorrow.